Howdy to everyone and greetings. And especially, there's a number here I haven't met before. Hopefully that can happen before the day is over. And greeting to those on the internet and the phone hookup. Good to see all of you, and it was really nice to hear the happy babble in here. People talking. I don't know whether it's going to get you all slowed down long enough to get started for church or not, but that's a good sign. That's a good sign. And Connie's on the internet, or Mrs. White, and I believe she is. See, she plugged in, Al. Can you tell? He don't know. Okay. Sometimes you have the two-way system. You can tell where people are coming from when they're hooked up to the internet. Anyway, she said she was going to try, and so I've got to be careful what I say. Okay? This is being edited. All right. We do appreciate, as Mr. Corbett mentioned, and I appreciate very much the invitation to be here with you all. And it's good to see the continued growth. We do have growth every, in the different areas. It's slow, but it is coming. I do thank all of you that made it possible for Mom to be here as well. The other day, Thursday, Mark and I, or Mr. Mickelson, I'll give him a title. I can only get him this way, you see. Anyway, we drove to Manson on Thursday, and we returned with Mom, and really appreciated that. It gave us an opportunity to tell stories, compare notes and concepts. And one important subject came up. We discussed the in-depth values involved in bow building and archery. I don't know how far I tipped him toward the addiction, but I think between Derek on one side and me on the other, at least he will get into throwing a spear. Whatever. Give you a little catch-up information. Connie and I have been in Alberta now for 5 years, less 2 months, and I think some of you read in the United News, that the transfer had occurred back in somewhere in August. Well, we're still in the process of transferring. We have a home to sell in southern Alberta, and then looking at Kalispell as a location to settle. And from there, we'll see where we'll permanently locate. At the present time, I'm still involved in the Canadian Council and the festival over in Regina, Saskatchewan. Now, from Kalispell, it's 5 hours to Lethbridge, and it's 5 hours on over to Regina, Saskatchewan. And I'll try to take care of those churches on two monthly basis. Okay, so it's going to be a bit of traveling yet, but Kalispell seems to be the central area. So between Missoula, Kalispell, and the other two areas, that'll be the immediate responsibility, and we'll see how that works out. You never know. It might become too much of a stretch for me since I'm getting senior. Man, I'll tell the white hair out here, I'll tell you. I was looking back here at all these young fellers. We've started churches with fewer people than that. You know that? So, anyways, really happy to see that. Personally, Connie sends her most profound affection to everyone. She is busy holding the fort there and involved in the house, but she's also availing herself and plunging into some new studies, which is keeping her busy. And she has made remarkable progress health-wise since the Feast of Tabernacles. She's come back up. She was down for a long, long time. She wasn't able to attend the feast, and that was the first time she has not attended a feast since she's been in the church. And it was rather devastating, but we had to adjust and move on from there. Well, I think that's about it. I think I know a little bit how Abraham feels. Because remember when the instruction was for him to get his household and get up and move out of his area, and I will lead you or I will show you where to go. You know, it is possible that Abraham didn't know he was going to Canaan for, well, hopefully it won't be that long, several years. Because they settled up in Haran for a while and then he moved on down into Canaan. I often wondered about that. how much of an incremental thing that was for Abraham. No. Anyway, I tucked that back here, and it helps in the faith department that we're going to end up exactly where we should. And hopefully we already have that figured out. It's going to be good to work with the Corbetts more closely, as we have in the past. It's been a 5-year hiatus for us. We were in Montana there, and then we went north, now we're back. So hopefully we will not get into too much trouble. We may have to submit ourselves to some kind of editing or monitoring, but we'll try to keep things straightened out as best we possibly can. But it will put us closer to this area and have a chance to visit with Mom. And that's been quite a while as well. Appreciated what Mr. Corbett, the context of his message. And I too thought, I don't have a whole lot of information on the anniversaries here, but I'd like to connect some of the material, because anniversaries are much like a diary. When you go back through the pages of a diary, you come up with who was here, and who is still here, or who wasn't here and who is now here. And you have it's a moving picture, as it were, in a progress or a flow of continuity. And I wanted to emphasize that there is continuity in God's church, and all of us play a part in that. In Matthew 16 and in verse 18, I'll just turn there. We won't take up an offering today, so we'll have to have a scripture in here. Jesus said, I will build my church. Down in verse 18 specifically, I say unto you that you are Peter, and upon this rock, speaking of himself, the great granitic cliff, I will build my church. And he says, and the gates of hell, or the grave, Hades, will not prevail against it. So what we have here, he is saying then, that death and change will not stop the continuity in God's church. And so each of us plays a part in that continuity. And this is what I want to emphasize as we go through here today. I will be, Jesus said, working with and in my people in all generations. I see another generation coming online, and this is good. We need to mentor, we need to train, we need to give whatever opportunity we can to our young, and then as God chooses, he will put them in the positions he wants them in. And so that continuity will continue. I'd like to see Christ return, but then again, so have my forefathers, so has my dad, so has Mr. Armstrong. I may not get to. I may have to come up in the resurrection. I don't know. I'm not setting dates. I'm not disparaging them either. If I read the financial report, we're going to flee tomorrow. But then on the other hand, it's never worked that way yet. Okay. So over in Acts 14 and verse 27, I'd like to point this out. The Apostle Paul, whenever he went someplace or he would arrive, he mentioned what God was doing with him and with those that he was acquainted with. So he would bring news from different church areas and different individuals to where he was working. And notice in verse 27, and when they were come and had gathered the church together, they rehearsed all that God had done with them. So the continuity that we have is God working in and with us as individuals. And we do, some people have a better memory than myself. I know Mr. Armstrong used to say 14 and two-thirds years, or 16 and one-third years. I never could narrow things down that completely. Some people can. But he remembered times and events. Some of you do that. Some of you have that ability and that particular kind of a mind. I have to go back and say, well, it was about in between these two festivals and so on, and then it becomes a little bit clearer. But again, I want to emphasize what God had done with them. And so the contributions that each of us in this room have made has been in conjunction with God, and His Spirit. And this has helped form the continuity that we've had, and that continuity started, of course, in 31 A.D. and has continued down. So the Spokane group that started in 1964 has continued. There's not too many. Are there any originals? Hot dog, 1, 2. Oh, you were born into it, I can tell. 3 or 4? All right. So you see, we do have that. Boy, you know how long that makes? That's 40 years. And that was a brave thing you did. She raised her hand. Because we can say, well, 20 plus 4. No, I don't know. Well, 1964, I can tell you where I was. I can't tell you where all of you were. I was just graduating from Ambassador College. And they handed me the keys to a Plymouth Fury and a expense book I didn't have a clue how to run, and said, go. And so I landed in Kansas City, Missouri, and from there I went to Omaha, Nebraska. I was able to start the church in Omaha and then over to Des Moines. That was a pretty busy year in 64. And then in 65, I was in Winnipeg, whatever that place was, Canada. And honestly, as a good American, they said, we'd like to transfer you to an area that has never been plowed. And I said, uh-oh. You got that in the military, wasn't it? You know, how'd you like to chauffeur the general around all day? He said, yes, sir. You got a wheelbarrow. So you had to be a little bit skeptical of these juicy offers that were given to you. But it was, and they mentioned Winnipeg, and I said, well, okay, that's good. Now, I'm in Omaha, Nebraska. How many of you know your geography? It's just right over the border. I didn't have a clue. Now, I knew on my high school maps that there was this big country up there, all different colors. That's about the extent of it. Anyways, that's how I became acquainted with Canada. Later on, I learned how to spell Manitoba. And what we used to pull on everyone is, can you spell Saskatchewan? That's cool. I won't go into that one because there's some awful funny spellings come out of that one. But anyway, Mom and Dad didn't come to Spokane until, I think, it's early 70s. So there was some, although they were visiting out of Seattle, past Spokane into Montana, even at that time. So that's a little bit of the history. So I'd like to have you think a little bit through the years. Where were you? When did you come on board? Where did you drop into this flow of continuity? But also, what has been your contribution? Now, this is not corrective. I want you to recall some of the things maybe that did occur in your life and the contributions you've made to the body of Christ. I'd like to have you recall that and to take a look at your efforts in this process that I want to emphasize today of continuity. 1 Corinthians 3, and sometimes if we can place a little more value on those things that have occurred in our lives, we'll begin to see that a little bit more how God does work. And later on, I want to bring out a little bit of something that Mr. Mickelson said, which I think is very, very true. Well, he only speaks truth, anyways. I mean, it's a good one-liner. But I will get to that in just a little bit. So, you know, I just warmer you. Not everybody. Well, anyways, it's warm. That's good. Long as I'm not having a hot flash. My wife used to give those to me. I don't know how she did that, but well, I could really pick them up. Okay, go back to verse 9, if you please. For we are fellow laborers together with God. You are God's husbandry. You are God's building. So God is building. According to the grace of God, which is given unto me as a wise master builder, I have laid the foundation, another man builds thereon, and let every man take heed how he builds thereon. Now I feel primarily in here, or fundamentally, this is a message to the ministry. It certainly is a definite message to the ministry, but also the principles in here, hopefully we can all take and utilize. He says, for another foundation can no man lay than that which is laid, which is Jesus Christ. All right, basic conversion. All right, now verse 12, and if any man build upon this foundation, so I want you to recall some of the efforts and some of the input and some of the decisions you've had to make and your contributions in this continuity, in this flow that we call the Church of God. If any man build upon this foundation, gold, silver, precious stones. Well, and then there's the other side of it, wood, hay, and stubble. Now, apparently, though these three items, wood, hay, and stubble, their works can be burnt because they didn't stand up, because it wasn't put together quite correctly. Apparently, the individual can be salvaged. But you notice the first three, and that's where I want to keep this. Gold, silver, precious stones are only enhanced by heat or trials and decisions that are made. And no one stays here without a certain amount of friction or difficulty, trials, decisions that must be made. And I don't know, and I know that you have to do what the rest of us have to do. You have to do a lot of praying sometimes. And you have to take a look at fasting and make some decisions. Decision-making isn't always easy. But I think I'm looking at a room full of people who have made decisions, because I think there's a lot of people who are not here that wouldn't make decisions. Okay? That's just my personal bigoted opinion. He says in verse 14 then, well, he talks about in verse 13, every man's work shall be made clear. So we can analyze and take a look at our own works, as we can see the works of others. For the day shall declare it, because it shall be revealed by fire, and the fire shall try every man's work of what sort it is. So trials do that. And the process of time, when you talk about 30, 40 years longevity in the Church of God, you're talking about a lot of situations that have come up, and a lot of decisions that have been made, and a lot of God's Spirit has worked in and with an individual to create those contributions. Now, in the sermon that Mr. Mickelson gave on Nigeria, I appreciated that, I've listened to it several times, he made a comment. He said, God heals, well, as close as I can get it as direct. In this matter of healing, God blesses often in a way that can be somewhat explained away by natural causes. Remember that? And I've thought about that, and that's true. It isn't just a matter of healing. But in a lot of areas, now, so I raise this question, in the blessing that you hope for and whatever, and it did occur, can we explain it away by, oh, the thing turned, luck of the Irish, or whatever? Or was God really in there working with us and manipulating things a bit for us? He tipped the scales. That's what I want you to take a look at. And when you begin to go back and you see a lot of items, a great many things that have occurred in our lives, God was probably in there a whole lot more than we may have realized. There is such a thing as deliverance. I mean, that's when you are in a box canyon and there's only, I mean, the Red Sea has got to open, so to speak. That's deliverance. But most of the time, we're not in that kind of a pocket. We're in daily circumstances or moving. Like I say, right now, to sell our house, I haven't got a clue what's going to happen. Where are we going? Well, we know generally where we're going. And now it's solidified down. We should probably get a rental and take a look at and see where we're going to settle permanently. And I've got to do something pretty soon, because I'm 72 years old as of November the 11th. So I don't have forever. But you know, those things will pop up, they'll come up, and they'll materialize when they're needed. Very grateful to my wife. She keeps preaching that to me when I begin to exercise my left brain and try to figure things out so exacting that I get into a stew and, you know, and I become distorted. She reminds me. You know, these things do happen, and God is working with us. So anyway, that's just, I don't want to refer to myself all the time, but notice here in, well, wait a minute, I had another thing here, but I wanted to emphasize that point. Because I have anointed individuals, and I anointed an individual just the other day. And I thought it was really interesting. This individual was very sick. I mean sick. Down. Anointed the individual. By evening, they looked so good. Color was there, but they still, stomach is still bad. Could not eat. Couldn't eat. And I could not convince them that they had improved dramatically. I said, look in the mirror. I don't feel good inside yet. And I said, okay. But there's still been intervention. And that's gone on for several days. So that's when I thought about this situation here. So it was kind of a test, I think, for the individual to take a look at the noticeable change and be encouraged by it, rather than go by a few things that had not been cleared up and say, I don't know whether God was there or not. So anyway, trying to get you to search in yourselves a little bit. You know, sometimes an act or a contribution or an effort, some are more necessary or needed and catches maybe the limelight. And sometimes they can be looked at as maybe not as noteworthy or other things not as noteworthy. Some things are very necessary and they do catch the limelight rather quick. If I'm talking along here and or you're up here and you have about 5,000 people out there in front of you and you're making a point and all of a sudden, PA system went dead. Boy, would the PA people scramble, wouldn't they? Okay, that's a very necessary thing. All right. And so all the focus would be back here in the room as these fellows are trying to plug in wires and wonder what happened, because all of a sudden there was silence up here. Okay. Then those are noteworthy things. And we kind of went through that a little bit at the Feast of Tabernacles this year. But every effort that's been made by everyone is also honorable. That's what I want. Hopefully I can pass on, that you'll value that. And in valuing that, you'll see God working in your life just maybe a little bit more. Let's go down here to Romans 12 just for a moment. Now, these are very familiar scriptures. Romans 12. This whole chapter could be read in this context. He said in verse 1, I beseech you, therefore, my brothers, by the mercies of God, that you yield or present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto God, which is your intelligent or reasonable service. And be not conformed to this world, but be you transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is good, what is good and acceptable and perfect, the will of God. Now I want to focus here for a moment on the word renew. In Vine's Dictionary of New Testament Words, this word is koinos or kainos, however they pronounce it. It says new, and I'll just read the definition. I think it needs a little bit of interpretation. He says it denotes new of that which is unaccustomed or unused, not new in time, recent, but new as to form or quality, or of different nature. Of different nature from that which is contrasted as old. In other words, this isn't something that just comes on the, pops up and it's brand new. This is more of a refreshing, and the RV translation brings that out. It is a refreshing of what is. So some of the things that go on, we might look at, say, more as commonplace. It's a renewing, it's a refreshing. On the computer, I should have talked to Al before I make this statement. He might have to correct it for me, but there is a refresh button. And my understanding is if you hit the refresh button, what it does, it rewrites the screen and maybe clarifies a little bit or brightens a little bit or whatever. This is what I'm trying to get across here. Something that may be considered commonplace or somewhat ordinary that could be explained away, it's refreshed. It is brought into a greater definition of vision. So kind of take a look at how God has been working in your life and value that. Because if those things hadn't happened, this congregation wouldn't be as large as it is. It's going to grow larger. And as Mr. Corbett brought out, to a place where God can graft people back in. A long time ago, a minister said there's got to be two kinds of people in the church. As it grows along, there are pillars and there are leaners. You have pillars that stand up, leaners that lean on the pillar, right? Okay, well, when we all come in, we're kind of leaners. We're new. We need those pillars around. And then as time goes on, leaners begin to grow up, we've got more pillars. Now God can gather more leaners. I thought this analogy that stuck with me for about 35 years. When I came in this church, I couldn't even find all four Gospels. Now, there isn't a youngster in here that doesn't have a better understanding of the New Testament than that. Yeah, you're getting a real jump start through the programs that we have. So I started pretty green. I was kind of a real leaner. I was listening to everybody and everything. And I appreciated the advice I got because I had to make some pretty big decisions at different times. Coming into the church, there were some real severe trials. And I never, ever made it by myself. Never. There was always a hand. There's always someone there. One man came up and leaned alongside of me. I think I've told you that story. I won't give you the whole story. He leaned up against the wall next to me, and I was totally devastated to whatever this particular trial. And he said, "Glenn, I don't know what to tell you, but can I just stand here with you?" At that time, that's all I needed. I needed the support. That was a long time ago. That was 44 years ago. That helped. I remember it to this day. Was God in that act? Was He responding? I think so. Did he help set a pattern for me? Yes, He did. Yes, He did. So, whatever. Well, He died in the faith, thankfully. Not that He died, but He was in the faith. Where others around Him didn't stay there. So I'd like to share with you just a couple of stories here. Okay, you do have a clock. I was speaking the other day, and here lately I've just been a real windbag. I've just, yep. And this one congregation, I said, I was looking for a clock because I was really trying to curb this thing. Some kind of a disease. It causes a ratcheting of the mouth. And one of the fellows got up out of the congregation room and put his coat over the clock. I said, "I appreciate that." In other words, go ahead and talk as long as you want. But anyway, he did that, and I did cut it a little bit shorter. But the several events I'd like to share with you, and hope it does empower each of us to believe a little bit deeper and yield a little bit more to God and His will. And let Him have His way with us. I'd like to acquaint you with the Feast of Tabernacles in Regina. Well, just a little bit of a PR trip too, by the way. And I'll tell you a little bit about Regina because it is a rather unique area. I know there each area is, in its own way, is maybe not unique but rare, very special. In other words, you've heard about Nigeria, very special place. Regina, and to this date as yet, has not had as many people attend it as they have in Nigeria. I thought that's interesting. So I look at Regina as being small among the nations, but yet it's there for a special reason, and we had the reasons. In 2000, I think it was, 2001, it was a satellite people gathered from scattered around the prairies, and they gathered there, and everything was piped in from Kelowna via satellite, and they had a big 6x8 screen, and they just went on, and that was their services, and the people got together. In 2002, we had 160. Mr. McNeely came up, and it was a whole different configuration that we had then. In 2003, it's 105. And last year, we had 90. I said, oh, you're going downhill. Well, maybe. But what I've noticed about each year, it's come together at the last minute. It's just the nature of the brute. It just kind of comes together. And we only have a rough idea who's going to be there. Sometimes there's more, sometimes there's less. But you see, that's not the reason Regina exists. It's not for numbers. But what we did, we were thinking about it, and it came up, and it just seemed to be the thing to do. You look out across the prairies, and you want to put a feast site between 500 and 1,000 miles from any other feast site in North America. It's 1,000 miles from Kelowna over to there. It's about 800 from there down to Wisconsin Dells. I don't know how many into Colorado, but here is this little old bitty dot on the map called the Feast of Tabernacles. And what makes it even more interesting is that the local group there, there are 12 individuals do the legwork to put that together to serve those that will be there. The other two reasons, well, it gives that group a chance to host, and that's what they really would like to do. But talking it over, we decided that, hopefully under inspiration, that we needed to create a presence for United in this incredibly large, what I call spiritual vacuum. Now, there's all kinds of splinter groups out there, and living room folks, because there were multiple thousands in our former association out there across the prairies. I mean multiple thousands. Now, we weren't out there dragging a net trying to fish those people out, but it is rather interesting what happened this year. I'll get to that in a moment. But there is a presence. United is here. We've got something to tell you. And then secondly, we have a home for anyone who would like to come and worship with us. And those seem to be very legitimate reasons. And so with that, in one sense, we were commissioned to build the ark, and we found that God supplies attendance each year. And each year there is a dramatically different configuration. It just is a different one. It's always been exciting. Again, we're small enough that we do things together, and almost all of the people, over 85%, attend every function because that's what they want to do. And we're in one hotel, and so there is a very, very connected togetherness. Now, okay, I was going to tell you. Okay, well, I might as well tell you now. The thing that was unique this year, even though we were smaller, 10 to 15% of the group were WCG folks in some degree of spirituality. And we didn't advertise, but finally, here came quite a group. Now, it's going to be interesting to see how many of those will stick, and several families already have committed. That wasn't primarily what it was there for, but that was the makeup last year. Now, I don't know what's going to happen this year. Let me just acquaint you with a few of the individuals involved and see how this comes together because of the decisions and the contributions made by different individuals. Now, if you went to Kerrville, you'd have a story to tell, or if you were in Kelowna, Wisconsin Dells, each feast site is very special. I'm just trying to sell you a little bit on Regina. Some of you have been there, and you've appreciated it. The assistant festival coordinator, Mr. Teethart, was a local deacon until this feast. Now he's the elder in the area. However, he's the one that contacts the businesses, does the legwork, canvasses for meeting halls, collects data, and then we sit down, we discuss it, and we make a few decisions, and it's put into motion. Being an assistant fundamentally means you get to do the work. That's what being an assistant usually means. We try to work together, but still the load, the fundamental load is on their shoulders. And they've done an incredible job. I'm very, very proud to be able to work with them. And we have a new challenge this year because we've got to change within the city to another site. So we've got to change hotels due to some commitments that the hotel has made. They're very sorry that they've made them now, because 4 years ago, they were extremely jaundiced. A church, and I don't think this is going to work out so good. Well, we'll give you a try. And they had all kinds of restrictions on us. Now they can't do enough. And they brag about us. And it's been an amazing, just to watch the change within these individuals who didn't trust any group like ours, because they'd been stiffed a few times. They'd been ripped off by religious groups, and they were extremely careful. But now they really can't do enough. The choir director, and Mom sang in the choir, I think it was 2 years ago now, in Regina, and it was quite an occasion there as well. The choir director is from Calgary. Now, this man is fully capable of serving in a large festival choir. He's got 40 years, 50 years of background. He has his own musical group. He does a lot of things like that. But he made a decision. He said, I grew up in that area. I really don't want to go back. Now, at one time, it was pretty sparse and pretty barren out there in the prairies. Okay? They were cow towns, and there wasn't a whole lot going on. Most of them now are convention cities, by the way, because people can have access to them. But anyways, he made a decision. And now he comes each year. Now, he doesn't really know, because of the way the system works, who all he's going to have before he gets there. It's much like Jerusalem. You kind of make it up as you go. In some of these areas, we receive some information, but we just don't have that much prior commitment. So he comes prepared, and he put all the music on CDs, transpose it all, and sometimes he said, well, we'll have a few solos for special music. Or we may have a quartet. Well, we've always ended up with a choir so far, even with those small numbers. And he's been able to work, but his contribution has been immense. To the success of that whole operation. This year, speaking of the PA crew, last year we had individuals who had the internet up and everything. I mean, we had all the professional equipment. We were just humming along and so on. This year, because of transfers, several of the fellows had to go in there and put together a PA system. Now, we tried to get it all labeled and go in there and put it up precisely. Well, it didn't work. So, band-aiding a couple of karaoke machines together, and thankfully he brought about 40 or 50 connectors. I've never seen so many connectors in my life. All over the place, but we had sound. I thought, no big deal maybe. But you know, they worked pretty hard to get that whole thing together, and without that we wouldn't have had much. The man in charge of ushering, man I respect very much, he might even be online, so I won't give you his name, he'd be embarrassed for a long, long time. A very capable, a very faithful man, but he's a very quiet man, just works behind the scenes. And at the end of every service, I hold out my hand and he puts the attendance in it, just like that. Everything is seen to, he looks at. You know, and I've always thought that, you know, in taking care of a group like this, it may be a lot of physical work, but it's done with a spiritual mind. There is a connection. The type of service, the type of serving that the individual gives. This year, or last year, his wife, they brought their own personal piano to services, because normally we're lucky to have a piano player. This year we had five. I don't know. And she stepped back and shared that with everyone. So we had a lot of, I think, wonderful things happen. Families, one family came just to kind of relax at the feast. They were a musical family and ended up being the core of the special music and the fun show and the whole nine yards. And as things picked up, they just enjoyed it no end. So these are commonplace things maybe. Well, what about the individual who farms up there and his whole living is dependent upon getting that crop off? This man was, in his particular case, I think it was a section and a quarter he was farming. And either the grain had not been knocked down or what he had knocked down was still in the swath. And they came to the Feast of Tabernacles with about 3 inches of snow on top of it. Because we had an early winter. We had a very wet spring, a very wet summer, and an early snow and freeze. Well, as you can see, there's been a kind of an Indian summer thing happened. So when they left, they went back, and they picked up a lot of most of their grain. But when they were headed for the Feast of Tabernacles, it's in the swath, and there's snow on it. And if it continues, it's a wipe. Most of you know that. This individual, I asked him if he would mind doing the opening prayer, or would it bother him? He said, yes. I said, but will you? He said, yes. You begin to share the hearts of different individuals. That was a big deal. But I still remember 40-some-odd years ago, my first opening prayer in Bible study. Man, that was a trauma. I got out 7 words. Pretty close to 7 before I had to close her down. Here's a man that farms and ranches over a section of land. And he felt that the contribution to the congregation was that big of a deal. And it bothered him. Well, anyways, he's got some experience now. I could go on with more. Mr. McCullough came up for the last half of the feast, so that made 1.5 for the duration of the feast, salaried elders, and we had then 4 fellows from the different areas up there, non-salaried men. And that was our speaking. So everyone had opportunity, two to three opportunities, plus the song leading, plus a number of things. And they came, one man came from Cincinnati, others came from across Canada. And we merged together. Now, how do you do that? You choose to be unified. And I can see that's what's happening here too. God is in it. God makes it happen when men will and women will yield their minds and their hearts to a common cause and be part of the continuity. It was especially helpful for me personally because about 10 days before the feast, I was clobbered with shingles. I thought that was an ancient thing, but then more people I talked to, oh, I remember my case. And I've never seen so many people who had shingles. And it's just like somebody didn't make the turn in that pickup truck and you were in the lane. That's what it feels like. It really is devastating. So I had given up a lot of my song leading for the feast because I do dearly love it. But these fellows carried through and everything flowed. And people were saying, it's the best feast I've had in 10 years. Well, not everyone, but a great many of them. So anyway, moving on from that, how are we doing here? Well, pretty good, Glenn. I'm going to try something out on you, if you don't mind. I feel kind of relaxed here. Don't want to get too relaxed. I just run off like water. Well, I wanted to ask the question first before I get to the other one. In analyzing the above, whose contribution was the most valuable? That's a question I wanted to kind of pique you with. You see? No one act or person made the feast in Regina memorable or outstanding or remarkable. There was no one sermon that pulled it all together. There was no one special music that brought everybody to tears. But everybody was moved on a continual basis. So it was the combined effort and the flow of everyone. So Some days it was the choir, the next day it was the speaking, whatever, but it all worked together for this continuity, for the flow, the end result. I had one more example I want to try out on you, see if I can get this across, because I want to use it again. And it comes down to the same thing, which part is more valuable? Okay? And this goes back to a story about Rusty. Now, Rusty is a 1980 GMC pickup truck. Now, the reason we call it Rusty, I originally called it Rusty because it had the rust-colored paint and the cream-colored paint. My wife calls it Rusty because in that part of the world they use salt, and your cars become customized by corrosion very quickly. So Rusty, you can see it coming. Anyway, but you see, Rusty's only half as old as this congregation, so but I wanted to talk about, without losing you ladies, so please bear with me. I know when I get into mechanics, I won't get very far into it. But you know, there's hardly a one of you in this room that doesn't drive a vehicle now that you can't, from burnout to 60 miles an hour, make that in about 10 seconds, right? Anybody have a car slower than that nowadays? Well, there's one or two. Still got the art. But relatively few, right? Even the Neons and these small cars can pretty well somehow take that energy that is developed in that engine, and most all of us by this time know when a piston, when it explodes up there, it drives a piston and turns that goofy looking thing called a crankshaft, right? But you know, well, I'll have to go back and say most of these cars nowadays are front wheel drive. Okay, I've got to go back one step further to the rear wheel drive. Okay? Now I am dated, but so is Rusty. But Rusty is also a 350. Now I gave that to my son, and as Rusty became a little bit dated and the 350 was beginning to limp, he said, well, like every young man said, we've got to improve on this. So down came the engine and it was punched out to 20, 30 over, in go the high lift, this and the racing pistons and the 9 to 9.5 to 1 heads, and oh my goodness. So we got ourselves a power plant. And it is a power plant. To me, the church is a power plant. A tremendous amount of energy. Now, somehow from the front end of this vehicle, through a whole lot of combinations, we get to the rear wheels. And if the rear wheels aren't burning and moving, that's just a ton of scrap iron, right? Unless there is something moving, unless there is some kind of production. All right? We're all convinced of that. Now, from that engine, there is a flywheel. That's that funny-looking thing with all the ribs on it that the starter engages, buckled on the back of the engine. On the other side of that is a torque converter. It looks like a flattened football. Now, all this energy has got to come through here. Then it moves on into the transmission, down the drive line, into a differential, and it comes out. That seems like an awful lot of areas to take away power, and maybe that's why they came up with the front wheel drive, because you don't have all of that. But anyway, it's interesting to me that engine, which he had to slow up at 9.5 to 1 heads, because the next thing he'd be burning, not oxygen, obviously, alcohol. Couldn't use pump gas. Okay, so this thing is hotter than a pistol. Now, from the engine and all of that into the flywheel, and the flywheel is anchored on pretty tight. But looking at it from this direction, there are three bolts in this flywheel that connect to the torque converter, which moves the energy through. I'll cut a long story short. Things were running. And one day, we came to some clanking, not clunking, clanking. Now, those mechanics in here will know the difference between a clunk and a clank. We pretty well ruled out a rod was going out, and, you know, after all of this investment and all this whatever, there was this clanking noise. Clank, 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 and it quit. Oh my, where is this going coming from? So this went up through the engine, so maybe it's a fan assembly, so that was changed. And clank, 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 clank. Quit. Then it got so bad we had to park it. So when we finally got it to a place where we could take it down, went underneath and pulled off the cover below the flywheel and the torque converter. And the fellows crawled under there and he looked up and he saw one bolt was gone. One bolt was half out and one bolt is just beginning to work its way loose. Bolt number one that was gone had lost its integrity and gave up its responsibility, if I can draw an analogy here. And I left two to continue the continuity of this power from this engine down through the successive steps into making this vehicle a productive, viable machine. And productive to the master's use, if you want to use a biblical phrase. Now, bolt number two was still holding, as I said, but it was bearing most of the burden, the one that just had started to work its way up. Now, even by itself, it couldn't made it, I don't think. Because if, in fact, two bolts had fallen out, this would have thrown that thing possibly into an elliptical situation. And who knows what would have happened from in the drivetrain back. Now, so the bolt that had was struggling and hanging on, doing the best it possibly could. That's the third bolt. It was keeping that flywheel, at least, in a circular motion. Now, it was being beat up, and it was backing out. But it was still hanging on. Whose contribution was the most valuable? I think they both, in their own way, were that extremely valuable. One was hanging on, and the other one was doing the supporting work. But there was one missing. Well, we found the bolts. We dipped them very deeply into Loctite, and you mechanics will know what that is. That isn't supposed to move forever. And they were torqued in, so we had now three bolts back. And so we started her up, and beautiful. Oh, man. What did we miss? Well, we looked back underneath, and there was the other bolt. Been hung up in there somewhere, but now it came down. It was stuck between the starter and the flywheel and stalled the engine. Okay. Oh, crank the flywheel back. Boom, out. And I was going to bring it. I got it in the car. Here's a bolt that was once very useful, but it gave up its integrity. And right now it is beat beyond any almost recognition. It isn't good for anything except what I have it for, demonstration, and to be in my, where we used to put cigarettes, anyways, in there. I carried it around. It was kind of a funny little story, but things were caught. And so engine's running. But I thought, to me, that was fascinating, how this all worked out. One was still carrying the burden, one was supporting, and even though one had given up its integrity and left the scene, so to speak. So let's go to 1 Corinthians 12. I think the analogies are clear. Some days we carry the load, and some days we do the supporting. And in my opinion, it's all of God. If it's in the church, then that's where our heart is. And God makes that happen. One day doctor, next day patient, that kind of a thing. 1 Corinthians 12, and just a couple of verses here. There are differences of operations, but it is the same God that works all in all. And verse 7, but the manifestation, in other words, the demonstration of what we can see, of the Spirit is given to each man to profit with. So how many of these decisions that we make that might be kind of commonplace? You know, there are, like I say, some situations are more necessary, more expedient, more dramatic, and they're seen very quickly. But you know, when I reach 85 or 95, I can still do this. At 95, when I try to come up those steps out there, and I mean, those old joints really aren't giving me but about 2 inches. I need 6 inches to get up over the curb. And one of you decides to step in and help me. You know, that's much appreciated. Whatever, I'm picking out a very small act, but somebody had to make a choice. Maybe to put themselves out a little bit and come on over and help this old guy up over the curb. So it may be a small act, but for me, mercy, that's only 25 years away, 23 years away. So I can get in this room and sit down and hear one of these youngsters like Mr. Mickelson still preaching. That's going to be a big deal. Because you see, probably by that time, the church is the only home I got. And the only semblance of sanity on the face of this earth. And to be deprived of that would be dramatic. So, which act is more valuable? I think it depends upon the particular time at when something is done. Some things are very heroic, and some things stand out dramatically. But notice over here in verse 12. Again, you've never read this before, so I'll have to read it to you. Yeah, you're okay. As a body is one purpose, one direction, one has many members, and all of the members of that one body, being many, are one body, so is Christ. That's how Christ is made up. Now, let's drop on down to, you know the other verses in here, I think, by heart. So let's go down to verse 21. For if the eye cannot say to the hand, I have no need of you, nor again the head to the feet, I have no need of you. No, much more those members of the body which seem to be feeble, or more needy, and at different times we're going to be needy. At 95, I'll be quite needy, I'm pretty sure. Until then, I can make decisions to assist. He says, they are necessary. Well, this, I think, is the analogies that I wanted to get to pass along and hopefully to encourage all of us, maybe here on an anniversary of looking back, to take a look at your involvement over the years. And don't discount them. You know, Paul said, on this matter of boasting, I don't mean to get to bragging on ourselves either. But Paul did use the word boast. In the context he used it, though, did he not? By the way, that word means to glory, means joy, means to rejoice. If we can recall and boast in doing the right thing at the right time, as the Apostle Paul said, let us boast in Christ. Because I know I wouldn't even know the right thing to do, except God has stepped into my life and he began to straighten me out one line at a time. There's not an emotion, there's not a thought in my life that has not been overhauled in these last 40, 45 years. Not one. I didn't know how to treat people. The world had trained me. What few things I did have in a perspective, my parents put there. I'm very grateful to this day. But I did a whole lot of changing of the roadmap all by myself before Christ stepped in when I was in my mid-20s and did begin to work and do something with me. So I came in 45 years ago. Some have come in 30 years ago, some at 20, and some are just now beginning. There is a continuity. And you know, all of these acts, these demonstrations in our lives to each other, are going to be repeated and repeated. Because you see, our youngest in this room, they have to experience these things just like those of us who have been around a whole lot longer, to the full development and to the full picture. So So when Paul said, by the renewing of our minds, by the refreshing of our minds, these same things happen over and over and over again. And they're very meaningful. So after 40 years, we have evidence of this continuity because this congregation is here. Not like the one bolt that decided to give up its responsibility, but you have kept yours. And you're here with a longevity. Now some of us have longer longevity than others, but we're all still here. Okay? And it's still the same power has helped create the necessity or the necessary obedience and the good works that has made this continuity continue. We're not driving people away. It's a very attractive and a very warm place to be. And so I do want to say congratulations on your 40th local anniversary. And I want to thank you very much for building a church home that we can all visit and we all can feel very safe in.